President Kennedy's News Conference. From Washington, D.C., the CBS Radio Network brings you, by recording, the 30th News Conference of the administration of President John F. Kennedy. This is George Herman, White House correspondent for CBS News. Beyond any question of a doubt, the news conference held this afternoon in the auditorium of the State Department was unique in this administration. In contrast with the cautiously worded statements of the past month or two, Mr. Kennedy today let go with both barrels. He opened his news conference, as you'll hear in a moment, with a lengthy and impassioned denunciation of the steel price increases announced in rapid succession last night and today. The president was so carried away that at the end of this statement, he paused and nearly went directly to questions. And then, catching himself quickly, he apologized and went on to read his other two prepared statements on other matters before returning to the newsman he had briefly recognized and then interrupted. From then on, you'll notice the president returned again and again to the question of the steel price increases, sometimes at the behest of the reporters, sometimes because he found this issue so tightly interwoven with many other questions about our economy and our national policy. The president's anger was clear in his words, but it had burned now for more than 21 hours ever since Roger Blau of U.S. Steel came to the White House yesterday evening to give the news to the president as it went out to the newsmen. So while Mr. Kennedy's face was stern and unsmiling, it was not flushed, nor was it expressive of anger or passion. You can judge for yourself the tone of his voice as well as the weight of his words as we present now the full and unedited playback of this afternoon's news conference exactly as it took place at 3:30 in the State Department auditorium.
The simultaneous and identical actions of United States Steel and other leading steel corporations increasing steel prices by some $6 a ton constitute a wholly unjustifiable and irresponsible defiance of the public interest. In this serious hour in our nation's history, when we are confronted with grave crises in Berlin and Southeast Asia, when we are devoting our energies to economic recovery and stability, when we are asking reservists to leave their homes and families for months on end, and servicemen to risk their lives, and four were killed in the last 2 days in Vietnam, and asking union members to hold down their wage requests, at a time when restraint and sacrifice are being asked of every citizen, the American people will find it hard, as I do, to accept a situation in which a tiny handful of steel executives, whose pursuit of private power and profit exceeds their sense of public responsibility, can show such utter contempt for the interests of 185 million Americans. If this rise in the cost of steel is imitated by the rest of the industry instead of rescinded, it would increase the cost of homes, autos, appliances, and most other items for every American family. It would increase the cost of machinery and tools to every American businessman and farmer. It would seriously handicap our efforts to prevent an inflationary spiral from eating up the pensions of our older citizens and our new gains in purchasing power. It would add, Secretary McNamara informed me this morning, an estimated $1 billion to the cost of our defenses at a time when every dollar is needed for national security and other purposes. It will make it more difficult for American goods to compete in foreign markets, more difficult to withstand competition from foreign imports, and thus more difficult to improve our balance of payments position and stem the flow of gold. And it is necessary to stem it for our national security if we're going to pay for our security commitments abroad. And it would surely handicap our efforts to induce other industries and unions to adopt responsible price and wage policies. The facts of the matter are that there is no justification for an increase in steel prices. The recent settlement between the industry and the union, which does not even take place until July 1st, was widely acknowledged to be non-inflationary. And the whole purpose and effect of this administration's role, which both parties understood, was to achieve an agreement which would make unnecessary any increase in prices. Steel output per man is rising so fast that labor costs per ton of steel can actually be expected to decline in the next 12 months. And in fact, the acting commissioner of the Bureau of Labor Statistics informed me this morning that, and I quote, employment costs per unit of steel output in 1961 were essentially the same as they were in 1958, unquote. The cost of major raw materials, steel, scrap, and coal, has also been declining. And for an industry which has been generally operating at less than two-thirds of capacity, its profit rate has been normal and can be expected to rise sharply this year in view of the reduction in idle capacity. Their lot has been easier than that of 100,000 steelworkers thrown out of work in the last 3 years. The industry's cash dividends have exceeded $600 million in each of the last 5 years, and earnings in the first quarter of this year were estimated in the February 28th Wall Street Journal to be among the highest in history. In short, at a time when they could be exploring how more efficiency and better prices could be obtained, reducing prices in this industry, in recognition of lower costs, their unusually good labor contract, their foreign competition, and their increase in production and profits which are coming this year, a few gigantic corporations have decided to increase prices in ruthless disregard of their public responsibilities. The Steelworkers Union can be proud that it abided by its responsibilities in this agreement. And this government also has responsibilities which we intend to meet. The Department of Justice and the Federal Trade Commission are examining the significance of this action in a free competitive economy. The Department of Defense and other agencies are reviewing its impact on their policies of procurement. And I am informed that steps are underway by those members of the Congress who plan appropriate inquiries into how these price decisions are so quickly made and reached, and what legislative safeguards may be needed to protect the public interest. Price and wage decisions in this country, except for a very limited restrictions in the case of monopolies and national emergency strikes, are and ought to be freely and privately made. But the American people have a right to expect, in return for that freedom, a higher sense of business responsibility for the welfare of their country than has been shown in the last 2 days. Some time ago, I asked each American to consider what he would do for his country, and I asked the steel companies. In the last 24 hours, we had their answer.
Mr. President?
I've got one other statement here. Mr. Hatch is going to release a statement in regard to the release of the guards. Let me say in summary that Secretary McNamara and I have carefully reviewed our progress in achieving permanent increases in our military strength. We have concluded that the rate of progress of this effort is such that if there is no serious deterioration in the international situation between now and August, we shall be able in that month to release all those who were called involuntarily. Our continuing strength after this release will be much increased over what it was a year ago. Just as an example, the number of our combat-ready Army divisions in active service after the release will be 16, as against 11 a year ago. The release is not the result of any marked change in the international situation, which continues to have many dangers and tensions. It is the result, rather, of our successful buildup of permanent instead of emergency strength. The units we release will remain available in a new and heightened state of combat readiness if a new crisis should arise requiring their further service. I know that I speak for all of our countrymen in expressing our appreciation to all those who've served under the adverse conditions of living in camps and being taken away from their families and their service and the willingness of the great, great majority of all of them to do this uncomplainingly, I think should be an inspiration to every American. And lastly, last Saturday I issued an executive order creating a board of inquiry to inquire into the issues involved in the current labor dispute in the West Coast maritime industry. The Board of Inquiry filed its written report with me today. In its unanimous report, the Board stated, quote, "The current strike, if continued, will affect approximately 130 cargo and passenger ships, including those which constitute the principal mode of transportation of passengers and vital cargo to and from the state of Hawaii," unquote. Other reports I have received clearly manifest that a continuation of this strike imperils the national health and safety. I have therefore instructed the Attorney General to seek an injunction against this strike under the national emergency provisions of the Labor Management Relations Act of 1947. While an injunction will restore the West Coast maritime industry to full operation and return the striking members to work for 80 days, it should not, and I hope will not, interfere in any way with efforts towards full settlement. I call upon the parties to make that effort, to achieve that settlement quickly. However, the public interest does not permit further delay in applying for an injunction. Consequently, I've made the decision to direct the Attorney General to apply for an appropriate order.